Most of Magog's troops were young men, not long out of their teens, if at all. As such, and with each other overwhelmingly for company, they were prone to fits of sheer adolescent exuberance that were purely inexplicable to the rest of the population. So there wasn't any point in looking for a good reason Private Jasper McComb, formerly of the Zarks, should take it into his mind to race into the field of wildflowers, extending north of the tracks, tearing off his utilities as he ran, to the wild cheers and applause of 20 or so of his buddies. He did it because they dared him to. It was spring, after all, even if it was spring in the Deathlands, right on the heels of a chemstorm. Spring makes wild animals do strange things. Adolescent human males definitely fell into that category. Besides, they were backed up by what was likely the most potent killing engine extant in all the Earth. What could possibly harm them? What would be stupid enough to try? 40 yards out and down to his skivvies, McComb turned and waved his white undershirt over his head.
Woohoo! I did it! I told you I would! Woo!
All the way! Take it all off!
It wasn't that they actually cared to see his skinny white ass. They were wild young animals too, and mainly wanted to see if he was triple stoop enough to do it. Naturally, he was. He skinned the shorts down his pale shanks. He had somehow been able to shed his baggy trousers on the run without great difficulty, but the underpants hung up on his boots. He started hopping around.
Goddamn skivvies! Woo!
Standing down by the stream and the cut it had made, supervising repair of a bulky pump, Sergeant Banner heard the ruckus. His jaw set. He knew that when the troops sounded like they were having that much fun, they were doing something prejudicial to discipline. He marched up the bank to tell them to stop. He was way too late. McComb had come to a little clear spot in the field of flowers, which was why he stopped there to begin with. Now he hopped right over to the edge of it, and one of the flowers moved, extending on its stalk, so it appeared to the watchers, to give him a kiss right on the left butt cheek. They went loco at that.
Ah! Son of a bitch!
Woo! Where did that dumbass go?
McComb jumped and slapped the blossom away. The soldiers didn't see the red mark it left behind. McComb's jump took him in among the flowers. Another darted at his leg. He recoiled, tripped on his skivvies, and fell down. The boys loved that. They hollered and punched one another and threw their hats in the air.
What in the name of thermonuclear devastation is going on here?
Oh, shit, Sarge. We weren't doing nothing, just, having us a little fun.
McComb jumped to his feet and began racing madly back to the train, taking spraddling, high-kicking steps. He got no more than a dozen steps before he tripped again and fell. There was a wild commotion out among those lovely, innocent blue blossoms. McComb reared up once more. The blossoms were planted all over him. Faces stuck to him like sucking mouths, which they seemed to be. He looked as if he had been showering in gore. His own. A couple of his buddies plunged right in after him. Others began to follow.
Shit! We gotta help McComb!
You men halt! Stand firm there!
The mass of would-be rescuers stopped. The blood flowers, roused by McComb's headlong passage, had been ready and waiting for the first two. They were already thrashing and screaming and batting at the blossoms that struck like rattlesnakes and clung like napalm. Their baggy fatigue saved them, more or less. They came stumbling out of the flowers, one supporting his buddy, with their uniforms in tatters and blood streaming from dozens of punctures, each rimmed with a red circle like a tentacle sucker mark. The one doing the helping lived. The other, his femoral artery opened by a particularly well-aimed bloom, bled out and died within 15 seconds of Mildred's reaching his side at a dead run. Not even Magog's treasure of meds could save him. The general ordered no effort be made to recover McComb's body. No one kicked about it. Magog drove on remorselessly toward the ruins of Ken City. Unknown parties sniped at them. A gaggle of wags drove alongside the train as heavily armed Coldhearts tried to clamber aboard. Though they appeared too close for Magog's emplaced heavy weapons to bear, her crew drove them off with handheld blasters and grens. Before that happened, several raiders managed to get inside the shell by blasting open the armored passage between cars with a shaped charge warhead salvaged from an M72 Law wag chiller. Doc himself killed one in the sitting room of the general's personal car, using his sword cane, which the general had ordered returned to him. Magog never slowed. The Great Train was halted for 3 days by a major washout of a bridge across a river swollen by spring runoff. Despite being in a near constant frenzy of impatience to get to Kansas City, the general decided to repair the bridge rather than risk backing up and trying to look for another route. After 6 men were washed away to their deaths when a wall of water came howling down from upstream, the general himself literally waded in to help with the operation. When a tribe of Stickies attacked the repair party, the train's commander himself was wading waist-deep in water near midstream. A Sticky got an acid-oozing fingertip sucker affixed to the general's left cheek. The general blew the mutie's head apart with the .45 caliber blaster he carried in his shoulder holster. When it fell back into the torrent, the Sticky tore open his face. Streaming blood, the general continued to work until his men begged him to get attention. He headed into the medwag long enough for a silent Mildred to neutralize and clean away the acid and bandage the wound. Then he went back in the river. The bridge was patched enough to pass the armored train's weight. Magog rolled on, and finally, it approached its destination.
Time to reload. Deathlands is continued on the next CD.